Programming sponsored by Charity Mobile. Life is calling. Take it with you. More information at charitymobile.com.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
The thing that attracted me to Pat is that he's someone who really knows how to communicate in a way that is meaningful, real.
Mandy asked me to begin with, she's like, can you explain what is it about him that's so great? Why would anybody think that he would make a good president? And I said, I'm glad. I would love to explain that to you. I'll talk to you about it.
What had been a really nice night turned into a fight where we went to bed angry.
We're going to be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Our marriage is very strong.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, coming up, we'll get into that issue too. And I want to talk a little bit about, civility. I want to talk a little bit with you coming up in a few moments here on vilifying our neighbors and loving your enemies. There's a lot to talk about, especially with the political divide we have in the country. But if you're just joining me, we were talking a few moments ago. You can go back and listen to this on our archives. Great conversation about how God offers divine protection. You know, especially there's something about sacramentals. There's something about sacred items. There was a fire that broke out in West Virginia Church this past Sunday, and it was so hot the firefighters could not go into the building. But when all was done, when they put the fire out, I was sharing that all the crosses, all the Bibles in the church somehow miraculously survived. And you know what that makes me think of? Just another situation. Remember the Great Peshtigo Fire? It's the worst recorded forest fire in U.S. history. The very worst. Devoured more land than the state of Rhode Island. It incinerated people, turned sand to glass. It was horrible. It's what the Virgin Mary prophesied in her apparitions at the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help, or in Champion, Wisconsin. It was Robinsonville at the time. She warned of this. 12 years to the date of that prophecy, it came true. And it was there on that day, the apparitions of the Peshtigo Fire was closing in to devour this little church. People gathered to pray. And the fire was miraculously stopped at the boundaries of the shrine. And when the fire quelled, they looked out, and there was nothing but a sea of ash. The little shrine was like an emerald in this sea of ash. It was amazing. Back in 2015, there was a fire at a military base in Madrid, Spain. It burned out of control, and when the flames finally died down, they found a statue of Our Lady of Lourdes totally untouched. It didn't even have any black on it. And the immediate area around it was spared as well. So, you know, it's absolutely amazing. Even the vases with the flowers were spared. Like, how does that happen, right? The Catholic company posted an article, and they asked their customers for stories. And guess what? They poured in. I'd love to hear yours, too. I'm going to be joined by Monsignor Swetland in just a couple minutes here. But I will take a few more calls. I'll share a few more of these stories with you. But let me right now go to Jennifer. She's listening in Arizona. Hi, Jennifer. Good afternoon.
Hi. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for calling.
So we were talking about things being divinely protected in fires and catastrophic events.
Mm-hmm.
The original church in my hometown was built in 1899.
Right.
In the early 1960s, they had a fire, destroyed everything except the baptismal font and the altar.
Wow, I love that.
And they said the story that I've heard, there was even holy water still left in that baptismal font that should have evaporated.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's God's divine protection. It's amazing when and thank you, Jennifer, for calling and for waiting to share that. It's just amazing how many stories like this come in over and over and over again. It's amazing. Anna's listening in Greenfield, Wisconsin. Hi, Anna. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for taking here.
You got it.
I love your show.
Thanks.
Just we listen as much as we can and support you guys in prayer and financially whenever we can as well.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. The miracle that I talk about, I don't know if he had anything in his car or on him, but years ago it was Memorial Day weekend, the close of like late Monday night. My parents were over for a cookout. They had gone home long ago. I was in bed, sound asleep. Phone rings, and it's my mother. I need your help. I said, what's going on? Your brother had a flat tire on the way home. He needs some help. And I'm like, okay, I'll pick you up in a few minutes, blah, blah. Get over to her house. We go over to the overpass by the freeway where he's supposed to be, and there's really not a lot of traffic on the street, more traffic on the freeway. So we park the car, we walk over, and we're kind of looking over the overpass, and I'm like, oh, there he is. And I'm like, who's with him? And she's like, what do you mean? I said, who's with him down there? And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I said, Mom, there's somebody else standing next to him. Well, I mean, I saw there was somebody else standing there as clear as day. She did not see anybody. This was long before cell phones, so I couldn't call and say, hey, we're up here looking down at you. Who's standing next to you? So we finally were able to get AAA or whatever to come out and help him and such like that. When we finally get face-to-face, I asked him, I said, was there somebody else down there with you? And he looked at me like it was absolutely out of my mind. And he's like, no. He said, if somebody would have been with me, I could have walked somewhere to get some help or something.
I love it.
And it was just like, okay.
Mysterious messengers, so, God sends.
There was a lot of traffic, obviously, on the freeway. You know, people coming home from a holiday weekend and such. And
Anna, thank you for sharing that. I love it. I mean, there are countless stories like that, isn't it? It's amazing. Yeah. And it really, I think, takes off our blinders. Sometimes we're blind to the invisible. We're blind to the spiritual. We don't recognize or even are aware of the spiritual realities that swirl around us. And I think God, in situations like that, like we heard from Jennifer, like we've heard from so many other, these many cases that I shared with you of God's miraculous and divine protection, they just redirect our focus. And they draw us back once again to God, who is above the laws of nature, can certainly protect and allow things that should melt to survive. And it's a lesson for all of us to know that when we are in God's grace, you know, we are in the right place. That with that grace comes protection. With that grace comes a closer union to Him. And, you know, God is on our side. He's on your side. And He'll never abandon you. Know that. That's what these things remind me of. It's about 12 minutes after the hour. We could talk all day about this, but I do want to change gears. I want to talk to you about one other thing, okay? And feel free to join me on this. I'd love to get your take on this. Just something that's happening in our country I'll bring you up to speed on. You know, the House today, they're holding a vote on a resolution condemning bigotry. Did you hear about this one? I mean, this was news to me. I didn't realize this. It started out as a resolution that was condemning anti-Semitism, and it quickly morphed into something, really, it's so watered down that it's really not even, it's not worth the paper it's printed on or the time it takes to get the vote, but that's a whole nother conversation. Now we can, you know, we can take that news item and say, look at those leftist Democrats, you know, identity politicians, the whole lot of them, socialists, every single one of them, you know, they're all in support of abortion. We can rant, we can rave, they must hate America. You know, you hear these types of things, don't you? Anyone who votes for them is just like them. Of course, people on the other side of the aisle, they complained that this resolution, it wouldn't be necessary at all if the president wasn't so racist, if the rest of the Republican Party would actually stand up and oppose him. But because they don't do that, then they're in league with him, and they're as racist as the president. See, this is the dialogue. This is the mantra. This is what you hear. And I don't know where it comes from. I don't like it. I don't like this identity politics. I don't like this this bias. This prejudice, this villainization. Unfortunately, these kinds of statements are too common today in our political world. You know it. You probably have experienced it. One young liberal wrote at the Federalist that because he hadn't been, quote, woke enough, as they say, you know, on some of these social justice topics, his liberal friends, they flamed him on social media and then they dropped him. So he nearly came to a point of actually harming himself because, you know, this had devastated him so much. I mean, it rocked his world, and his conservative family actually saved him. Then he started, you know, making some new friends. They turned out to be political conservatives. Unfortunately, that kind of, you know, friendship is rare to find these days, and you do see it in people like Professor Robert George of Princeton. He's, of course, a very faithful Catholic. He's a staunch conservative. He's one of the most brilliant minds that I know, and one of his best friends is the black activist, Cornel West, I think, who used to teach at Princeton. And you'd think that the two of them would be at each other's throats, but they're not. Instead, these two guys, they are best friends, even though they really disagree with each other vehemently on the issues of politics. I mean, they have ideological differences, so diverse, you would think, you know, in today's modern world, they could not possibly be friends. How do they have anything in common? But they're great friends. You know, what we see instead are statements like, quote, why it's impossible to argue with anyone on the left, or why everyone who voted for Trump is a racist, you know, end of quote. Those are the types of things. Those are the kinds of statements that make it, you know, possible to have any kind of rational or civil discussion of any kind. So Monsignor Stuart Sweatland joins me today. He knows Professor Robert George very well. He played a huge role in Monsignor Sweatland's own journey into the Catholic faith. And I know you know Monsignor Sweatland, one of my favorites, the president of Donnelly College and, of course, chief religion correspondent here, and the great voice of Go Ask Your Father. Father, or Monsignor, thank you for taking time to join me today. It's always a delight to have you here.
It's good to be with you, Drew. Thank you.
So tell me about Professor George. What kind of
man is he? Well, full disclosure, he's my godfather. He sponsored me into the Catholic Church. We were contemporaries at Oxford, and he was my sponsor when I was received in the church. And you're right. Not only is he and Dr. West friends, but they, for years, team taught a course together looking at the classical literature of the Western canon and teaching it each from their own perspective together in a seminar that was very, very popular at Princeton, showing how people from different political and social backgrounds, different perspectives, different points of view can work together for the common good.
So let's talk a little bit about the common good. It seems to the common exchange, if you will, seems to be very divided today. We have elevated politics to the level of religion so that we absolutely have to win an argument. And you know, anyone who questions your political convictions is a heretic. And I've known people during the last political election who said, hey, look, I'm on Facebook. I've had friends since I was in grade school. These are 50-year-old people, 40-year-old people being defriended, you know, people not wanting to talk to them. What is it about politics? How did we get to this point? Has it always been this way? Maybe it has always been this way across the decades. But it almost seems that there's a greater lack of civility and a greater passion towards what side of the aisle you're on and what your political ideology is.
Well, it goes in cycles, Drew. I've been doing a lot of reading recently about the first half of the 19th century. I just got done reading a fantastic biography of John Marshall, the third Chief Justice of the United States, the longest lasting Chief Justice of the United States, and all the politics that swirled around him. I also read a book about Henry Clay and Daniel Webster and John Calhoun, three of the great senators and statesmen from very different political views that dominated that second half the first half of the 19th century. And the issues then were much like the issues now. Slavery obviously was the largest issue, and it was always threatening to tear the Union apart. But there were other issues. Should the United States have a common currency? Should they have a bank? What are the roles and powers of the states vis-a-vis the federal government? And remember, at that time, dueling was still around, and some of these disputes ended up in duels, famously Burr versus Hamilton, that ended in the death of some of these politicians. So at least we're not doing that right now, but we're getting close. And I think this every once in a while we have to take a step back. I remember the very turbulent realities of the 1960s and early 70s, where there was rioting in the street and protest that often ended in violence and destruction and fires and the like. And we do not want to go back to that very difficult time. And I'm always reminded that a healthy society, in a healthy political argument, you're always looking, just like we do as Catholics, you're always looking to help convert people to the truth. In an unhealthy political or religious situation, you're looking for people to call heretics and cast out. So the important thing today, I think, is that we should be emphasizing inclusivity and what we share, which is much, much more than what divides us. And I'll just give one example. If you look at the politics of Europe versus the United States, mm-hmm. the furthest left person you can think of, let's say Bernie Sanders, mm-hmm. And the furthest right person you can think of, and since he holds the presidency, let's say Donald Trump. they're so narrowly they're so close to each other that in Europe they would all be considered right of center and be in a very small little spectrum compared to the vast, wide political spectrum that you find in the European democracies. So actually, we're not that far apart. Despite some people saying that they're socialists, including Bernie Sanders, he is not proposing the end of private property. Right. He's not proposing that the government own all the means of production and all the corporations. That's what a true socialist does. So we don't have anyone advocating things from the far left, and we don't have anybody really advocating the kind of far right, kind of scary politics that you see in some parts of Europe.
My guest today, Monsignor Stuart Sputnik. If you want to join us, I'll open the phones now. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Feel free to join us. Are there strategies that we can use, Monsignor? You know, I know we mentioned Robert George being your godfather, and Dr. West, of course, a well-known black liberal activist, having this wonderful friendship. How do the two of them get along, and what can we take? Honestly, you know, if you have a – I've got a brother-in-law that's on the opposite side of the table with me when it comes to politics. And I know a lot of people probably encounter this, people at work or at home or whatever it may be. How do you – because the policy in most of those cases, like, we just don't talk politics. But how do you bridge the divide? How do you keep civility and yet exchange ideas? Because I think certain positions hold greater truth.
Right. Well, we always have to assume goodwill and good motives on the other side. This comes up even in things that are very close to what we believe and cherish the most. When I'm talking to someone who denies the existence of God, I don't immediately think they're a bad person. I think they're wrong, but I don't think they're a bad person. And, you know, I assume goodwill. And if with that assumption, I can start looking for places we might be able to plant seeds or things we might be able to build on to maybe help him or her see more clearly why belief's more reasonable than unbelief. Similarly, with someone who disagrees with us about abortion. To assume that everybody who disagrees with us about abortion is a person of bad will is, I think, a very inappropriate approach to that issue. I honestly believe that those on the other side usually think, even though they're incorrect in their thinking, they usually think that by supporting a so-called women's right to choose, they are advocating for full freedom and full equality for women. Matter of fact, I think most of them really believe that without that, women won't truly be equal in our society. I trust their sincerity on that. I think they're sincerely wrong. Don't get me wrong. But I recognize that they're people of goodwill who really care about women. That gives us a place to start, though. If they really care about women, then we can start talking about why is it that more women are killed by abortion than men. And we can start working and looking at some of the things that we share, and maybe that will be a way to crack through some of the misperceptions they may have about facts or about values.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, when it comes to those issues. You brought up abortion. I'm going to talk about that as well. I think there's a real problem in that both sides see the other as engaging in some sort of, you know, absolute evil. The Democratic Party absolutely supports abortion. They're pushing that envelope in a way like we've never seen before. And honestly, I don't get it. I don't like it. I do think it's an absolute evil. The Republican Party under Donald Trump is viewed as being a racist, a misogynist. You know, they paint him under all these different colors. So how do you deal with somebody who does support abortion, somebody who really is a racist? I'm not saying the president is a racist, but I'm just saying you've got these two different worldviews, and these are absolutes. Like, my conviction on abortion will never change. You know, I believe it's an intrinsic evil, period. But I still want to have a dialogue with somebody who doesn't believe that. But you know, how do you deal with somebody who is so – looks at the other side like they're embracing a real evil?
Right. And this is where we have to, and I don't always live up to this, but I try. We have to really listen to the other side. So, you know, my positions on immigration are well known. They're the position of the Catholic Church on immigration.
Yep.
And, you know, since in the modern times, starting with Pius the 12th on, the church has been very clear that there's a fundamental right to immigrate. But I understand that the other side are usually working a little bit out of fear. But they're working out of really being afraid. They're afraid perhaps for their jobs. They might be afraid for the economic position of our nation. They may be afraid about the influx of people who want to do us harm or who are, trafficking drugs or trafficking in people or someone who might really want to do us harm because they're ideologically opposed to who we are and why we are as a nation. I understand that real fear. I understand those concerns, and we have to listen to those concerns because often the disagreement isn't about, I sometimes say, the issue isn't the issue.
Right.
Those fears need to be addressed. We do have a drug problem in the United States. Yep. In my opinion, it's a demand problem, not a supply problem. We have to start with our own insatiable desires to use illicit drugs as a nation. That's the issue, but that has to be addressed. We are concerned about people who want to do us harm. We are concerned about gang and gang activity and human trafficking. And those issues all have to be addressed. Yep. Now, there's ways of doing that without scapegoating people who are just fleeing for their life or their livelihood, both of whom we should see as people who are in the image of Christ and the Holy Family, who had to flee for similar reasons from the Holy Land to Egypt. So, you know, this is where we listen and find out and try to see, okay, where can we work together? And that's what Washington used to be very good at that. They had to find the middle ground to get anything passed. They wanted to get things passed because they wanted to bring home to their home districts benefits that the government could give. But now, because they don't have earmarks, they don't have the same motivation to get things passed. So a little bit of nothing is getting done because people aren't willing to compromise at all. Politics is the art of the possible. We do have to see that on the political realm. If we're going to get anywhere in some things, we're going to have to compromise.
All right. I guess, Monsignor Sweatland, and if you've got a question, a comment you want to join us, feel free to do that. I'm going to go to the phones. I'll grab a couple of your calls right now. What has your experience been? Have you encountered real opposition from somebody because of your political view? How have you been treated? Has there been a lack of civility? How have you been able to bridge that gap? And you can also share how you feel we got to this point. Roy is listening to us in Wisconsin. Roy, welcome back. Good to have you on the air.
Oh, thanks, Drew. I have a question for Monsignor. Because we got a big issue with on our Facebook page of our high school reunion, and we've got some people that are on there that are real nasty leftists, and they don't even want them to come back for the high school reunion. Privately, we talk about them offline because those of us that are for life and for the good things, the right side, the light on the right, and Christians these other ones that are from California and stuff, they just destroy you. I've had to unfriend lots of them because they just say foul language on there and call us fools and idiots. And I wondered, I know we're supposed to stay in touch with them, Monsignor, because how else can you change a person if you're not having communication at all? But then everybody says, why do you stay friends with that person and stuff like that? I wanted to know what you think about that.
Well, I think we have to find how we can disagree without being disagreeable. And I know that can be a slogan, but, I think we need to call people out. When they're using foul language, I think that's very inappropriate. And say, look, you can disagree about ideas without calling people names. And I think, any group page should be moderated in such a way that if you call people names or use foul language, that at least suspends or maybe even terminates your ability to post, because no one needs sites that have that, on them. We want. And I've seen this in these kind of things before. And quite frankly, I just think we have to start doing fraternal correction. Say to people, you can disagree with me without being disagreeable. You don't have to call names. You don't have to use foul language. And if people can't live by those basic rules of civility, Drew and I has to live by them, because if we didn't, we wouldn't have a job. The FCC would get involved really quickly if we started using inappropriate language over the air. And, especially if we're fellow Christians, we definitely should be able to learn how to disagree even about important things without being so disagreeable that we have to revert to name calling or foul language.
Roy, thanks for joining us. Stay with us, guys. When we come back, we'll talk more. Carlo, you're on deck, and You can join us 888-914-9149, vilifying our neighbors. You know, how we view people in the opposite political party. What's your experience been? How do you view them? Maybe I'd love to hear it. We'll be right back.